Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Your Turn to Speak with your host, Beth Miller. All points of view must be brought to light if we're to reach the wisest solutions to challenges we face. Guests on Your Turn to Speak have unusual insights to bring to the collective conversation. They have been invited because of the positive impact of their loving presence on Earth. Though their ideas may be hidden by the glare of the mainstream focus, their perspectives are guaranteed to inspire and enrich us all. And now, here's your host, Beth Miller.
Welcome to Your Turn to Speak. I'm your host, Beth Miller. Tonight, listeners, you will hear about some astonishing voyages of the soul, meticulously recorded in the journal of a woman who finds joy in helping others blossom into their true selves. Besides being the author of the book Journals of a Healer, Mary Blake is an intuitive counselor, channel, and spiritual healer. And last but not least, a jazz singer. While teaching classes in spiritual development, it just happened that Mary Blake discovered an amazing technique to eliminate negative influences from other lifetimes. She calls this technique multiple life therapy. Mary considers herself a catalyst for change. In her healing sessions, she works as a partner rather than a practitioner who fixes people. Her clients learn how to use the healing energy that is available to all who know how to use it. This knowledge continues to serve them whenever they need it. After observing two of her clients who came to her as a couple, at that time friends, experience the joyous occasion of their wedding, Mary Blake asked herself, how often can one feel like a fairy godmother while rejoicing in the happiness of a satisfied client or two? As you will hear in the following conversation, there is something fairy godmother-like about Mary Blake. That quality of magic goes hand in hand with her profound gifts that she offers as a spiritual healer. Welcome, Mary Blake. It's your turn to speak.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, it's an honor to have you with us tonight, Mary. And I wonder if maybe we can begin our conversation just by learning a little something about your early life, your background to, and basically what was it that preceded you becoming a healer?
Well, I was brought up in the middle of the Bible Belt in southern Illinois. And when I was 15, a single bolt of lightning came out of a clear blue sky without even a cloud in it and went straight down the wall 3 feet from me in our living room. And 3 weeks later at school, I gave my first massage. And I spent the next 25 years or so trying to convince myself that I wasn't doing anything except giving people massages because I was already weird enough. I didn't want to be that weird, you know.
Oh.
But then I actually had a bout with a cancer scare, and I went to an AHP meeting, conference. And
AHP, what does that stand for, Mary? AHP?
Association for Humanistic Psychology.
Okay.
And I met other healers for the very first time in my life. And they were not just ordinary people. Some of them were PhDs, and some of them were doctors, and very respectable people. And so I actually received a spontaneous healing.
Wow.
in that conference. And the next day, instead of coughing up blood and coughing for half an hour and a half, I just took a wonderful breath. And on the way home from Atlantic City, it was almost an ad hoc, what shall I call it? I was writing with a therapist, and she really analyzed me virtually with question after question, couldn't understand how I had lived through all of this stuff that had happened to me. And I suddenly realized that I had been denying all these years that I had been gifted with healing, and that I had received a healing, and it was literally payback time. So I dedicated myself the rest of my life to healing. So that's how it happened.
Wow. So you experienced this yourself, as well as discovering that by touching people through massage, you were kind of healing, offering a healing gift to them.
Right. I had no idea that I was channeling healing from the universe, that it was flowing through me into them. That's how it happened. You sometimes, God gives you something and you say, no, I'm doing something else. I'm very busy here. And and God whispers in your ear, and then he taps you on the shoulder and then gives you a little poke, you know, and if you completely ignore it, he just kind of shoves you off the cliff. And with something that dramatic, then you have to pay attention. And that's kind of what happened to me. So I finally stopped arguing and eventually I did accept and understand much more. I also feel that when you have a gift from God, it is incumbent upon you to make yourself a stronger, better instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my responsibility. So I studied and I practiced and I worked and I went to England and I studied with various people and listened to workshops and various things, and then came back here and began a practice as a healer. And shortly after, I mean, literally the second healing class I gave, there was a spontaneous regression. I hate the word regression because we simply don't go backwards in time. We just go to another now.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned, I was introduced to some of my spirit guides and by some of my teachers. And my favorite spirit guide, Stardust, has a number of interesting sayings. One of them is that there's only one time, and it's now. There's only one place, and it's here, because here and now are the only times you can do anything. So,
interesting.
So my clients and I go to another now.
That's interesting.
Where something happened to another incarnation of their, I think of their whole soul, their whole self, that is interfering with their life here and now in the 21st century here in New York,
mm-hmm.
or wherever we are. And it might happen in Philadelphia if I happen to be there, or Kansas or whatever. But wherever we are, we know that's what, only one now. So if everything's happening all at once, and we go to another now, and we work to prevent a really traumatic event from happening that resonates through many layers of consciousness and is hitting us here in our present now.
Right.
Then
Mary,
it all works better.
One thing that kind of puzzles me, I know about, you know, the kind of idea of past lives and in your sense, everything is now. Would it be possible to foresee a future life looking back at this one, or a future life advising us about this one?
Well, we have gone into the future.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking of psychic healers who kind of claim that they can foresee the future. And I'm wondering if they might have a mechanism of channeling into this other now.
Well, Stardust insists that the future doesn't happen until you're right in it. Imagine you're driving down a road and you come to a crossing. Now, at that crossing, you can go left, you can go right, or you can continue straight ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So if you continue going straight ahead, you will go to the future that was foreseen. However, if you make a radical turn to the left or to the right or the up or down, whatever, then that future that was foreseen will be altered.
Mm-hmm.
One of my teachers used to say that the predictions of the future are either warnings that we heed or do not heed.
Yeah.
So if we heed the warning, if something we think something bad might happen, and we do something that prevents it, then that prediction has been avoided.
Interesting. I noted in your book that you made a distinction between psychic healers and spiritual healers. I wonder if you could talk about that distinction here.
Okay. Well, psychic healers generally draw upon their own energy to affect the healing and their own knowledge. A spiritual healer, as it has been explained to me, taps into the limitless energy and the creative force and the healing energy of the universe. And unlike a psychic healer who may get very tired. And I've known many psychic healers. Some of them seem to wind up drinking alcohol or something to rejuvenate their spirit. Or some of them get very fat because their energy might be totally depleted, and they will be very hungry afterwards.
Interesting.
What happens to me since I pull down the energy and it literally comes through me, I wind up getting a healing every time I facilitate one.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Isn't it great?
Yes, that's great.
Yes. I was, totally unaware of this. But I don't know if you've ever heard of Itzhak Herzog, is that was his name? No, it's a Ben
Rabin.
Rabin, yes.
Yes.
He wrote Stalking the Wild Pendulum.
Mm-hmm. Is this the Israeli
Bentov? Itzhak Bentov. That was his name.
Okay.
He's the one that differentiated that originally for me, because I had no idea. I didn't realize that there was a difference. But I was attending a lecture that he was giving again at the Association for Humanistic Psychology, and he was discussing going to the Philippines and working with the psychic healers there, and just relating all these incredible adventures that they have had. And someone in the audience asked a question: could a psychic healer possibly hurt someone that they were working in? He said, well, if the client happens to be very well and full of energy and the psychic healer happens to be ill, yes, that can happen, that the energy can go in the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't stand it anymore, so I stood up and I said, I have to ask about this, because if the psychic healer draws from the healing energy from the universe, then that doesn't necessarily have to happen. And so he says, aha! He was very, very, very demonstrative. And he said, now you're discussing somebody totally different. You're talking about a spiritual healer. And so I bowed and said, thank you very much for the promotion.
Wow, that's great.
So it's odd the way we learn things about ourselves, you know?
Yes, it is. I see that we may have a caller, Kathleen, interested in a reading. Shall I have her come on the line?
Yes, but we'd be sure and tell her that we'd have to make an appointment, because it wouldn't be fair to concentrate on her too much when there were other listeners. But I would be happy to talk with her, sure.
Okay. Let me see.
Hello.
Hello, Kathleen?
Yes, hi. I had a quick question about employment. I didn't know if you could help me with that. A friend of mine offered me a position, but I haven't heard from him, and I wanted to know if you had an idea when I'd start working for him.
Well, again, I really don't do predictions, because too many things can change between now and then. I mean, you may be offered something else in the interim. But what I would suggest that you do is that you continue to prepare yourself for the best job that you could possibly have. And when you are prepared, and when you draw upon the energy that is available to you, and it's available to everyone, it's around us all the time, draw upon that and make yourself available and do everything you can to make yourself the very best candidate for the very best job that will be coming to you. And my recommendation is, when you think about receiving a job, give thanks for the miracle that's happening.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're most welcome.
Kathleen.
You may get even a better job than your friend was offering you, but be sure that you are the one who's going, no matter who offers you the job, you're the one who has to do the job and keep it.
Mm-hmm.
So the better prepared you are, the better, the more you will enjoy it, okay?
Okay, thank you so much.
You're most
welcome.
Bye.
Well, getting back to our conversation, Mary, could you tell the listeners how it came about that it just so happened that you were doing some of these soul voyages for people into their other lifetimes? How did that just happen?
Well, I was teaching a healing class, and it was actually the second healing class I had ever taught in my life. And I had been working on a case of colitis of a patient of mine, a client that I had worked on previously, and she was happy to be a demo for the healing class, so that the students could see healing in action. And as I finished with her, the woman who had actually instigated the class in the first place, who was a medical student who wanted training as a healer so that she could combine the natural spiritual healing and her medical practice, called me, and she was quietly panicking, and she said, "Ever since you started that healing, I've had flashes of myself with my knees up and blood all over the place." And within seconds, she was in labor, and we learned that she had traveled to a life in colonial America and was dying in childbirth.
Mm.
And I was panicking, very quietly panicking, because at that point I truly believed that so-called past life regression was a scam, and I did not believe it. And as I say, talk about being shoved off the cliff. So with no knowledge of it, no experience, and not even a belief in what I was actually seeing in front of me, all I could do was scream in my head for help.
Wow.
And it was as if I would, some wonderful, warm, wise, and incredibly beautiful being was just flowing into me as if I was a glove that was being filled up, you know. And I felt safe, and I felt, since I was totally out of my depth, I was just kind of floating there watching and listening to what was going on, and my mouth was opening up and saying things. And it turned out that that she had, she was having this baby, and her husband was not there, and she was furious at the husband. And when I wondered idly where the husband was, I found myself hurtling through the air and looked down, and I was over a forest, and it was like a bloody rag doll thrown at the edge of a trail. Mm-hmm. And found myself immediately back in the room with her and explained to her that her husband had been killed by Indians. And at first she did refuse to believe it, and then she finally did believe it, and she was instructed to float through the roof and to go and find him. And then she said she was ready to go. But somebody said, "You know, go and see your husband." She said, no, I'm ready to go." And so the spirit who was working through me guided her to go back through the roof again and keep going, and to go out to the edge of the Earth's atmosphere, where she would be met with spirits who would take her to the most wonderful place she could possibly be. And almost immediately she sat up and started describing, and everybody and all the rest of the students were full of questions. And she explained that she had floated through the roof as she was instructed, and she had just looked down out of curiosity to see what kind of a place she'd come out of, and it was a log cabin. So she decided she was not ready to go look for a bloody husband, so she would just leave. And so that was that, you know, and it turned out that it helped her immensely in her own life, because having died in that particular way, she always had terribly agonizing menstrual periods, and they stopped immediately. She just then had normal menstruation. And she also, the other thing that was had clung to her from that lifetime was that she could not bear to be around older men. We, as a class, kind of decided that maybe her husband in that lifetime was much older. Mm-hmm. And she became very, very attached to an older man who was one of our students, and that was over. Her life was completely changed because of that experience, and I thought it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and then it just kept happening, and eventually someone wanted me to do a private session. I really didn't. No, I had no idea that I had anything to do with it. I thought it was a super class. It was, what are these people? You know, who are these people in my class, you know, that this is happening?
Mm-hmm.
So it was only after one of the class members insisted on a private session that I had to admit that I must be the catalyst.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, people began to ask. And at first I called them soul voyages, and eventually I began to connect the knowledge and the wisdom that I had gained in the Association for Humanistic Psychology, and began to understand that we were actually doing therapy in other lifetimes. So that's how I came to call it multi-life therapy.
Yes. Wow. Interesting. I can remember, Mary, I did have a chance to read some of your book.
Okay.
And I have to say that one of the things I just loved about your book was some of your inner dialogues on your subway ride home from your classes. When you sort of were sitting on the subway, you're describing these thoughts that are coming to your mind that are so, I can just picture myself thinking the same thing. How did this happen? And what just happened? And what was my part in this? And
mm-hmm.
It's just so seemingly miraculous, but, you know, it couldn't be denied that these things actually happened because of all of the class participants
witnesses. Yes.
But, you know, your own sense of, in a sense, kind of humility and kind of discovering that this whole relationship of you being a channel and a catalyst, having to kind of get comfortable with those roles. I just loved that those parts of the book where you were just going home on the subway thinking, oh, what was that about?
It's true. It's very unsettling. You know, it really is. And you're kind of halfway in an altered state of consciousness anyway, and here you are. I wonder now how in the world I got through it. But I must have had some help, you know.
Oh, I think you did. I think you did. Absolutely. I'm so curious to learn more about Stardust.
Well, Stardust is absolutely amazing, and everyone who's met her says she's adorable. She has an eons-old entity And she volunteers to come and work with me. And she brings other spirits. And in the spiritual development classes that I taught, she would come in and do a little sort of a warm-up speech, you know, and she would talk and give out some ideas and then when she was felt that the class was ready, then she would invite in another spirit, and we never knew who was coming. Mm-hmm. But one night there was a Virgo in the class,
mm-hmm.
and she wanted to know how old Stardust was, because Stardust comes in the guise of like a 3-year-old, mm-hmm. and she comes in this little chirpy voice, and she's very funny, and she's very charming, and this Virgo wanted to know, well, if she was, you know, eons old or whatever, why did she come in as a child? And she said, because kids can get away with anything. So
she also has a sense of humor.
Absolutely. So then the Virgo wanted to know how old she was. And Stardust says, you don't have a number for that. So being a Virgo, she said, how many zeros? And Stardust, according to what they told me, Stardust thought a moment. She says, about 60. Oh. So then the Virgo asked, what is the number in front of the 60 zeros? And Stardust said, I'm not going to tell you. A girl has to have some secrets. So this is Stardust, but she tried to explain that in the spirit world, they don't have words.
Mm-hmm.
She said, when we want somebody to know something, we just zap them.
Oh.
And they know instantly everything inside and out. And so then somebody didn't think that was such a great idea if you wanted to have a spirit. She said, it's a secret. And she said, oh, my goodness. She says, we only zap them with what we want them to know.
I wonder if this might be, I know I have had some experiences when, maybe something has occurred and I feel myself getting goosebumps. I don't know if that's something like what you're describing, but I feel like something is like raising the hair on my arms. And
I call those my truth chills. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like when somebody says something that's absolutely the truth, but you can't prove it.
Yes.
And the little goosebumps, the chills and everything say, yes, yes, it's right, it's right. You can believe it.
Oh, mm-hmm. Also that comes when maybe somebody who appears to be innocuous kind of arouses a certain, I don't know, a reaction in me that it's almost like a warning, even though there's no objective reason.
Mm-hmm.
For,
do you have a thought about it before you get the chills? That a little uncomfortable feeling, a little thing, I don't know whether I want to be friends with this person or something. And then you get the chills? Or do you just get the chills anyway?
Well, sometimes there might be a little cue of some sort, like a certain glance or maybe a some kind of a cue or something
that
might not be actually verbally stated. But
well, now, you described two different reactions. You described the hairs raising, and then you describe the goosebumps and chills. The two are different.
Yes, yes.
The hair raising, I would say, the warning, and the chills and the goosebumps would be affirmation, confirmation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Does that begin to make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Okay, so you just notice the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And you will be even better able to work with the signals they're sending you if you understand what they mean.
Yes. I notice sometimes, too, like I can be going along, and this kind of is a pair to what you're describing as being in denial sometimes. I have internalized all kinds of things about, you know, for example, in jobs which I know weren't good for me, but somehow or other I felt like I had to persevere, I had to keep going, you know, and and then suddenly a voice inside me, loud and clear, was saying, "You're leaving at the moment you are 62, or something like that, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's like a command.
Uh-huh.
And that's all there was to it. You know, I knew that was what I had to do. But,
right.
You know, it's sometimes like you were suggesting that, you know, even though spirit might have different ideas for you, sometimes we protest.
Oh, yeah. The worst trouble I've ever gotten in my life was when I managed to talk myself out of one of those intuitive feelings. When I was told something, I knew, I got these weird feelings, I was uncomfortable, and then I would say, what is the matter with me? This perfectly nice person hasn't done a thing with you. Why are you doing this? And it was right. The feeling was absolutely right. So, yeah, we do talk ourselves out of the nicest spirit can be trying to protect us, and we just stop it. We just ignore it and go on and do what we were not told not to do or warned against, you know.
I wanted to switch gears a little bit here with an experience I had, and I think that you might address this also in your book. I know an energy healer, and I asked her if she would mind helping me. I would like to have a session with her.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite some time that, you know, she didn't respond, and I finally, after, you know, several days, approached her again, and she said, "No, Beth, you're blocking anything I could do. You're sending out blocks, even though they might not have been conscious blocks."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So she said that she would not have a session with me, and I was thinking that I think I recall reading in your book somewhere about you saying that if someone is not ready to receive a healing, there's it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, this is true. And sometimes you can work with them and help them to become more receptive. But no matter whether they ask for it or not, if they're actually closed, the energy just can't go in. When I finally submitted and understood that I had been wasting most of my life in denial, I was going around saying, "Oh, that person needs healing. Wait a minute, I got to go heal them." And sometimes, if they definitely did not want to be healed, my hands would get all blotchy and red and white blotches all over. You know, like if you sometimes if you slam your open palm against concrete, how it will get like that. Well,
yeah.
So I was so bottled up with energy and no place for it to go, and it was very, very uncomfortable.
Mm.
You know. So I learned the hard way that you cannot just go heal somebody. I mean, they have to really want it. Yeah. The only people that you can actually heal without permission are babies and animals.
Interesting.
But you know, if it's an adult, forget it. They've got to not only want it, but they have to be in the mood to accept it, because sometimes people who are receptive for one day will not be receptive another day.
Right, yeah.
So biggest jobs is to help people get into an altered state of consciousness so that they can receive.
Yes. Maybe like a meditation or some breathing exercises or music or something like that?
I often work with candles and with stones because you can literally charge a stone like you charge a battery.
Wow.
And when they hold the stone, it facilitates their working. But with the breathing and the visualization and guided imagery, is the best way I can possibly describe it. And explaining it in a way that they can understand and accept.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel that almost anybody could benefit from multi-life therapy if they were receptive to the idea of it? Or?
Oh, absolutely, because, you know, just as we bring forward unrecalled memories from our childhood that are affecting us, I've had some of my own, which were pretty bizarre, we also bring forth things from other lifetimes.
Interesting.
So, when we go to that lifetime and resolve that issue, then it no longer affects us.
Mm-hmm.
When you do hypnotic regression, it's a whole different ball game.
Is that how most people who consider having past life regression have it, is by
yes.
way of hypnosis?
Yes, and you see, when you think of something as in the past, it's cast in bronze. You can't do anything to change it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you go into another now and it's just happening, then it's very easy to change things.
Aha. Uh-huh. Hmm. Fascinating.
So in hypnotic regression, you kind of watch it as if it were a play. And you see what happened, and then you come back, and you're usually with doing it with a therapist. And so then what they do is you work with the therapist in traditional therapy, just as you would work through an unhappy event in your childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it takes months to work through that. But when what we do, we literally rewrite history and erase karma. So it's gone.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And it kind of attaches to the idea of the quantum physics idea that there is really no such thing as time and space. It's just all
You've got
now,
it.
Right?
You've okay. got it. Mm-hmm. Even before the quantum physics folks were saying this, Stardust was saying there's only one time, and it's now. There's only one place, and it's here, because here and now is the only place you can do anything. So this was, to me, it seemed as if the quantum people the physicians, or they, what can when you physicists, they are closer to spirituality than a lot of your ministers.
Yeah, I'm wondering, with this new knowledge, as more and more people begin to kind of wrap their arms around it a bit, if we might have, you know, kind of a revolutionary change from our past traditional, quote, religious paths to something kind of radically different.
Well, that is my hope. And I think as we reach out to each other, and, you know, every one of us experiences this differently, because spirit has to go through us to get their message out. I mean, they have to go through our ego, they have to go through our agenda, they have to go through what we think we know, and they have to go through what we think we want and how we think it's going to happen. So when spirit works through you, a little different result will come from the spirit working through me, because it's everything is colored by the instrument that it flows through.
Yeah.
Years ago, I was wrestling and struggling and to understand this. How can one psychic say this and another psychic say this and another person say another thing? And the minister who had this incredible minister experience be thinking on a totally different level. And we used to have an electronic shop called Crazy Eddie's here on the west side in New York City. And I walked in one day because I was thinking about getting a new television set. And there had to be at least 50 television sets mounted on the wall. And most of them were tuned to the same channel, and every one of them had a different picture.
Interesting. But that is a great analogy.
Well, it was a teaching for me, because here one had a little greenish tint, one had a little little more orange tint, one was a little bigger, one was fuzzier, one was smaller, seemed to almost be from a different angle. You know, because the way that the television set was configured was receiving and bending the signals in a different way.
Yeah.
So it just hit me, bingo. There's your answer. Okay.
And I love, you know, getting back to your point of connecting. Connecting, even though we might all have a little bit different perspective, it's nice to connect, because there are certain points of commonality that, you know, by acknowledging within each other, I think that can promote some more wisdom on the earth. And
absolutely, because none of us has the whole answer. None of us.
Right.
And we're just not capable of containing that knowledge. It's huge.
Right. That reminds me, Mary, I didn't mention in your biography that you are a blog talk radio host also.
Yes, I am.
And we should tell our listeners how they can reach your radio show, because in a way our radio shows are an opportunity for people to connect with one another. It's like a little thing that we do to help in our part, help with people to connect and to think about new possibilities.
Absolutely. Well, my blog radio cast is on Wednesdays between 1:30 and 2:30 Eastern Daylight Time, and you can access it and listen in by dialing 773-897-6549.
And if they wanted to access that online, they would go to what?
Let me think of it. I think it's
FR Broadcasting?
Yes, it is.
Yes,
thank you.
FR Broadcasting.
I don't have it in front of me, so.
Yes.
But
it's FRBroadcasting.com. I've been listening to your shows, Mary, and really enjoying them.
Oh, well, thank you.
I also kind of like some of the themes of your shows are relating to your belief in a healthy body being vital to spirit. And
absolutely.
Yeah, and it is very important to keep our bodies healthy.
Mm-hmm. Well, if the body wasn't important, why would an immortal spirit agree to lock itself into that body for an indeterminate period of time?
Right.
And the more we take care of that body, and the more, the stronger and healthier we stay, the more valuable we are to spirit.
Right.
I mean, who's going to pay any attention to somebody who's sickly and who's so fat they can't even walk through a door, you know?
Yeah. Well, Mary, I can't believe it, but we're approaching kind of toward the end of our program, but I wondered if you could answer, what do you feel is your major contribution to the world so far? And what is next for you?
Well, I feel that I guess my major contribution is that to help people understand they do not have to settle for what they have been told about themselves and what they have been taught about life, that within each of us there are incredible gifts, and within us there is genius, and the genius varies so drastically from one person to the other that the only thing that we can do is to encourage them to be a better version of themselves, and to trust themselves more, and to reach out and grow and never give up, never settle, never assume that because somebody said something to you, it must be true.
Hmm.
Now, as for my next step,
yeah.
I'm looking to travel and do platform speaking or home sessions with groups in order to open their hearts and their minds to new possibilities that they normally would not have considered had we not shared whatever we share.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it kind of reminds me of one of my favorite poets, Emily Dickinson. She said, I dwell in possibilities.
Oh, yes, I love Emily, yes.
Oh, I love, mm-hmm. I love that line. I dwell in possibilities. Well,
beautiful.
Where can my listeners reach you, Mary? I know that they can reach you by way of the Blog Talk radio through srbroadcasting.com, but say, for example, they might be interested in possibly hearing one of these platforms' speeches or coming to a class. How could they reach you?
Well, I have a very easy email address, Mary with a capital M, at themaryblake.com. With such a common name, I went on Facebook and there were 1,000 Mary Blakes, and I decided I just have to be the Mary Blake.
Way to go. Way to go. You know, finally, Mary, is there any particular message that you have for the listeners, any specific advice that you might want to just impart before we go tonight?
I would say listen, pay attention to what is going on inside of you. Take time every day to be grateful for what you have been given and who you are, and honor and respect yourself, because if you don't respect yourself, how can you possibly respect anyone else? And how can you possibly have the courage enough to offer your wonderful gifts to the world?
That's beautiful, Mary. Thank you so very much for the generosity of spirit that you have just given to our listeners. And I so appreciate you coming on and speaking with us tonight on Your Turn to Speak.
Well, it has been, you are a delightful interviewer, and it's just been a joy to be here with you and your audience. Thank you. And I would just say, just think of the I am and know that you are part of that I am.
Thank you. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
We are all one planet, all one people of Earth, all one planet.
You have been listening to Your Turn to Speak with host Beth Miller. Each week, Beth features guests whose important views are often overlooked in the mainstream dialogue. You can listen to this show again at freespiritbroadcasting.com. And be sure to tune in next Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern for another live, inspiring conversation on Your Turn to Speak.